I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Big day, ladies and gentlemen. The Kamala Harris interview tonight with Bret Baier. Sue, I've made an executive decision. My wife actually came up with this. Whenever we talk about the vice president, see if this is going to work for you here, we're going to use this.
Kamala.
From the SNL bit. So tonight is going to sit down with Bret Baier at 5 o'clock, and we're going to air that interview.
That's smart of us.
In total. I think it's smart, too. We were just kind of talking about this a little bit. You know, it's supposed to start at 5 because Bret's show starts at 5, so I would kind of assume maybe a couple of minutes of an intro, but who knows? They may want to maximize the time, and then boom, he just goes right into it. But we're going to bring it to you here, because if we weren't going to bring it to you, we were just going to watch it anyway, so then you guys would be, right, you know, sitting here listening to us watch it. So we thought we'd let everyone in on the fun, is essentially what we would do.
To hear her challenged on questions.
Well, that's the
answers.
Question. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I won't name there's someone in the building that's a media celebrity, and they asked me that question. They said, hey, is Bret going to do his job and hold her feet to the fire? I think that's a decent question. The one thing with, you know, these types of events and also the debates, sometimes we get our expectations set pretty high and those expectations aren't necessarily met. But here's what Bret says about today. If I can get him to come on. Bret, are you there?
Well, I just think that, you know, you're right. We have a lot of eyeballs. We have Democrats, independents, and Republicans. We have the biggest cable news audience. And this probably is going to get a lot more eyeballs. I think tough but fair is what I pitched it as, and I think that's what they're going to see. If you can think of the issues that people care about, that they ask pollsters, or they answer to pollsters what they care about, those questions are going to be in the mix. And, you know, some things that perhaps haven't been asked in other interviews. There's time. You know, 30 minutes is enough time to press and follow up. And I think we'll go down a number of different roads.
Here's my hope. And I think this is what I heard. All right. I'm going to extrapolate, if you will. He's going to ask her about the trans issue. And we're going to see if she goes on the record on that. Because, by the way, I think it would be wise of her. We'll see if she flips on this, because that's not even a close issue. I mean, Trump did a town hall last night with Harris Faulkner. They aired it today, and it was just with women, Sue, which was smart because that's, you know, his issues with suburban women in particular. And they had people raise their hand, all these moms, and ask them, "Do we have that, Fred? Yeah, do we have that actual audio?" And every one of them raised their hands last night. So this is something that is, you know, it's resonating with people. People care about it. Suburban moms do care about it as well. Here's what President Trump said.
It's such an easy question, and everybody in the room, and you know that answer. We're not going to let it happen. You look, just yesterday, they had a volleyball match. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Where a person that transitioned, okay, we have to be very careful because this can terminate your political career if you say it's slightly off.
Uh-oh.
Right? But transitioned from man to female and was on a volleyball. And I saw the slam.
Vice versa.
It was a slam. I never saw a ball hit so hard, hit the girl on the head. But other people, even.
No, that's right. He got it right.
No,
from a man
right.
to. Sorry, that was my fault. I don't want to leave people. I heard it wrong. But he went on here.
It's such an easy question. And everybody.
I queued it up to the beginning, guys. I didn't mean to do that.
It was a slam. I never saw a ball hit so hard, hit the girl on the head. But other people, even in volleyball, they've been permanently, I mean, they've been really hurt badly, women playing, men. But you don't have to do the volleyball. We stop it.
Now, he was talking about things, and Harris kind of came in. I heard her this morning sort of react to this. You know, I don't know how you stop it exactly. There's executive orders. Different states are, you know, dealing with this issue. But look, it is a... It's a topic that people care about, and they should care about it. And I certainly care about it. So I hope that that comes up tonight amongst a lot of other questions. This is pretty funny. This made me laugh today. So I can't even remember who retweeted it because I don't think I follow Brian Stelter. But Brian Stelter, is he still at CNN, Fred? Do we know?
I don't really. I knew he was let go. And then I saw him a couple weeks ago.
But was he on CNN?
Yeah, he was. He's irrelevant.
Anyway, here's what he said, because I honestly don't know where he works and I don't really care. But somebody retweeted him and you can't even make this up. Brian Stelter, formerly of CNN, said Brett Baer brings some significant baggage to today's Kamala Harris.
Oh,
thank you.
Course.
Thank you, Sue, for doing that, because I was about to hit this here. While
that great?
Thank you, Kenny. While he positions himself as fair, balanced, and unafraid above the partisan fray, a review of his emails and comments from the 20 election and aftermath suggests otherwise. Are you kidding me?
We're going to focus on him now.
Well, right.
Because that's what it's about.
You've got an entire staff at CNN, CNBC,
yes.
NBC, MSNBC, CBS News, ABC News. The list goes on. This is what's really, really funny about you know, everything with Trump and his health and his age. There was no inclination at all by Brian Stelter or any of these idiots on CNN to do any real investigation about who the hell was running the country
right.
when Biden was drifting off to sleep. They didn't care about that at all. They only care about it now because it's Trump. But for him, you know, here we are in the aftermath of embarrassing journalistic malpractice at CBS and otherwise. Even, you know, you heard Martha Raddatz on ABC the other day and J.D. Vance gave it to her. So we're in an era of the most biased media ever. And Brian Stelter's out there talking about Brett Baer. Here's what I've said to people, my lefty friends. This is true because, and Fred, you know this. Years ago, I didn't watch Fox, right? I didn't watch
right.
Fox for the longest time. And this is bad. I'm just going to admit to this. The reason was, and I knew about bias in the media. I knew that CNN was biased, but I felt like I was getting more straight news from CNN on the big stories that they would cover. This goes back a while, so okay.
Right.
This is really kind of before Trump, but even in the first couple of years. But it was for me, and again, I've talked about bias in the media since the late 1990s. Bernie Goldberg wrote this book, and I've been on this almost my entire talk radio career. But, you know, CNN was a habit. I used to watch the Today Show, right, as a habit because I did it for so a lot of people
right.
did that. But the Brett Kavanaugh hearings are what really turned me around because it was just ridiculous. And it wasn't only just CNN. It was the way that whole thing went down. But Covington Catholic, so many of these other things that have happened led me to say, okay, I'm gonna check Fox out. Now, in my mind, and this is, I'm just being honest with you with the perception, I knew who the Fox stars were, right? So Hannity's not my favorite. I'm just being honest here. He's okay, but never really was my favorite. So I wasn't watching the regular shows that were on Fox. And certainly I watched Bill because I know Bill. But when I started switching over, I saw Brett a lot. And this is what I've said to my left-wing friends when I talk about Fox. I said, I would put Brett Baer up against anyone in this business. I mean anyone.
Okay.
For the quality of questions and journalism that he has, you know, portrayed and performed on Fox. Now, would there be some bias? Is there? Well, yeah, they all have it, right? They all have it. But I would put him against any of these other guys.
Do we know why she has agreed to do this? Because you've got to think that that will come up, the trans issue, anything like that. Have they just prepared her, the capital T, they,
I guess,
for whatever the answers are?
We'll ask Brian that. You know, Jennings was going to join us this afternoon. We're going to switch him to tomorrow. Kilmeade's coming up here. It's a great question. I mean, I guess my gut check would be they know that they're in trouble in some of these swing states, and maybe they think that she can do a flippity-floppity thing here again on the trans issue, right? Even though, you know, this ad that they have out there, and this is hitting some of these Senate candidates, it's pretty effective. They know that. The campaign has to know that. David Plouffe has to know that. So they're going to probably coach her on an answer to a question, well, you know, where she wiggles out of that. No, we don't want, you know, biological males playing unfairly, but there's going to be a caveat or something like that. But Sue, look, I can't figure it out. I think there's a good chance that it doesn't go extremely well for the vice president. But it's also the Fox audience. So how many people are going to tune in here, you know, that aren't watching Fox? Right. Now, if she says something, if there's gaffes, et cetera, it's going to get a lot of play.
Well, I think the other thing is she doesn't actually answer questions.
No, she doesn't.
So, you
along
know,
those lines.
What is he going to do? Do we finally have somebody who will say, you must answer this question? I mean, otherwise, it's just her blah, 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 word salading the whole thing.
Thank you,
and
Sue.
It's worthless.
You're right about that. Let me play this from Charlemagne. I was heaping praise on Charlemagne the God yesterday because I think he's been calling her out in an appropriate way. And then what happens? She sits down on his podcast and he goes pretty easy on her. Okay. I listened to a good portion of it. I didn't think it was very good. Charlemagne could have pressed her on some things that he and his audience and his, you know, the players in the room have talked about. We played some of the audio from that yesterday. And I'll get to that in just a second. But this came up on reparations.
My question to you is, what's your stance on reparations?
I do have clear eyes about the disparities that exist and the context in which they exist, meaning history, to your point. So my agenda, well, first of all, on the point of reparations, it has to be studied. There's no question about that. As it relates to the economy, which is a lot of what you have addressed.
Here we go.
Look, I grew up in the middle class. My mother, you know, worked hard.
So anyway, we heard that clip, and I didn't think about it. I'm going to give credit. This is why he's the Hall of Famer, ladies and gentlemen.
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
Fred said to me, how do we know? You knew that Jesse played it last night, Jesse Waters on Fox, right? So Fred said, and this is good instinct, especially from Fred, and Ethan is our new producer, too. Abby used to check me on this. Was that real? In other words, she could not have done that in the reparations answer. It is real.
Wow.
It is real. She, in you know, this is where, so this occurred.
She's never going to answer anything.
But listen to this. This was one of the clips I played yesterday from Charlemagne the God. And when, I don't know who this is. When, maybe it's a caller. Maybe it's one of the players on the show. But they said this.
What you going to do for the economy? Well, I was raised in middle class. Man, we didn't ask you that.
There's no need for you to be that on script.
Yeah, so look, that's Charlemagne at the end there, and he could have jumped in at this point and said, now look, I get you get the vice president of the United States, however insipid and ridiculous she is. You probably don't want to create, you know, havoc, especially when you have African Americans that are going to try to be, you know, very protective of the race of the vice president. On a side note, just before I get any further, I have to do this because I forgot to do it yesterday because, you know, sometimes Trump is just really, really, really on point with stuff. So a couple of days ago, you might remember, we talked about there's this inclination on the part of the CNN folks and some other folks to say, we need to see Trump's health records, right? Remember the clip I played on Monday about the cholesterol?
That's right.
Nobody, J.D. Vance was with, I think it was Kristen Welker on MSNBC. Like, do you think anyone cares about Trump's cholesterol number? Are you kidding me? We're 3 weeks out from this election. So on Truth Social, I screen captured this, and I meant to say this yesterday. I got to get it out. He says this. As to her completely desperate request for my medical statements, she is dying to see my cholesterol, parentheses, which is 180, exclamation point. I have already provided them many times, including quite recently, and they were flawless. However, I have just seen Kamala's report, and it is not good. According to her doctor's report, she suffers from urticaria, defined as, I can't even get this out without laughing, defined as a, quote, rash of round red welts on the skin that itch intensely, sometimes with dangerous swelling. He wrote, she also has allergic rhinitis and allergic conjunctivitis, a very messy and dangerous situation. See, the great thing about Trump is you can hear him.
Yeah, you can.
I can.
Yes,
I can hear the sarcasm.
Yes.
Maybe that's why. Oh, these are deeply serious conditions that clearly impact her functioning. Maybe that's why she can't answer even the simplest of questions asked by 60 Minutes and others. What is this all about? I don't have these problems. The sarcasm in that is just brilliant. And somebody, whoever tweeted that out yesterday when I saw it, because I don't follow, I'm not on Truth Social, I had to retweet that. They said he still got it. And in fact, he does still got it on that note. Now, you know, I mentioned our friend, Mr. Jennings. Oh, my goodness. I'm worried we're going to lose him, Fred. I really am worried we're going to lose him. So the first thing, it is getting harder, right? The first thing I see this morning is this from McClatchy News Services, McClatchyDC.com. You ready for this one? KY's, that's Kentucky. KY's Scott Jennings is CNN's breakout pundit. Could he be Trump's White House press secretary? So I texted Jennings. I told him I'm going to call him the KJP of Kentucky. He didn't like that very much. He didn't think that was very funny because that's not a compliment. But you know, I don't know if that would ever happen. I'll certainly ask him about it tomorrow. I don't know it would be the best move, right? Those are always outside of KJP. Look, she's been there a lot longer than anyone thought for a variety of reasons. But I think he'd be good in that role. But I don't know if in fact that would ever happen. But look, he was quoted in this article talking about, you know, his role on CNN. And it was Dave Catanese who wrote this. Fred, remember Dave? Dave used to be here in Missouri. He was in Springfield. He went on to D.C. We used to have him on KMOX quite a bit back in the day. But when he did this, it's kind of a profile on Jennings. And he said, look, he sees his job as, you know, calling balls and strikes. He says that's his number one duty on the air. And I think he does a great job with that. Like, I don't know if you're calling balls and strikes necessarily in the briefing room. You're doing something a little bit different. So my guess, Scott's very successful outside of his role on CNN. He is a consultant, a political consultant from Kentucky. He runs campaigns, big campaigns in Kentucky. And he does, you know, the CNN stuff is kind of on the side. And he's just grown into that role. It was our friend Joe Arnold that introduced me to Scott many years ago before, you know, we had him on. Hey, you know, and this is when he was, I think, just starting on CNN. And he has been a great, great contributor to this show. All right, we better take a break because I got Kill Meat coming up. I don't want to be late on that. We'll have Sue, I got a couple of quizzes for you in the next hour. Alex Rich is going to join us from Y98. I went to the Walmart today in High Ridge. I love my Walmart in High Ridge. And I bought 9 items, okay? I took a picture of those 9 items in my grocery cart, and I then took a picture of the receipt. We're going to quiz the group here. Ethan, we'll have to put this up on the Twitter, too. We'll see if people can kind of chime in. But I want you to kind of predict how much that cost me for those 9 items in my grocery cart. I also, you know, I mentioned last night, I took off after the show. My good friend Johnny Holzman was here to meet me. He invited me to go see Sturgill Simpson at the Fox last night.
How was that?
It was great. But I also have a, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about that in the 4 o'clock hour, and I have a musical quiz for you based on something that happened last night at the Fox.
All right.
And I think you and Fred in particular, and, you know, most of the audience, if you're younger, if you're Ethan's age, if you're under 30, you might not know. Yeah, he's out. You might not know the answer to the quiz, but I think you guys are going to do well. And we'll keep you entertained until 5 o'clock, and then Brett Baer is going to do, you know, this interview with Kamala. With who?
Kamala.
Yeah, there it is. All right, we're going to take a break. We're coming back with Kill Meat on a Wednesday afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Kamala.
All right, a little Neon Trees here this afternoon. Waiting on Mr. Kill Meat. We're going to get him on the line here. Hopefully, in a couple of minutes, he may be off doing another interview. You know, I was talking about CNN, so there was something else that happened interesting on CNN that's kind of connected indirectly to St. Louis. I don't know this guy, Ryan Gerdusky is his name, and it says Native New Yorker on his Twitter handle, and he's got a book out here. Let's see. He was on CNN as an expert. He brought something out. Oh, here it is. They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. Seems like a guy that would be right up our alley, Ryan Gerdusky. Anyway, he's on CNN with Abby Phillips and Bakari Sellers and some, and he starts talking about crime. And have you, I'm guessing, Sue, because you live here in St. Louis, have you ever heard of, if I just say the Ferguson effect, would that make any sense to you whatsoever?
Well, I guess. I mean, you just mean on businesses, on people, on the city in general?
Yeah, you know, and yes. However, this is, it's been broadened out by our friend Heather McDonald, for example.
Oh, you know, I love her.
Right. So there is a, and it's a theory that basically holds, and this has been studied and researched, and not everyone agrees with it, but it addresses the issue of policing in the aftermath of Mike Brown. And what happened was, let's face it, there were cops out there. They're still doing it. I'm not saying, and nobody's saying that they're not doing their job, but what they're saying is the self-initiated arrests are down.
Sure.
There's actual
good
evidence from here in St. Louis.
It.
Right. Because, hey, I'm going to get involved in that? No way, because they're going to accuse me of being a racist, and then my career's ruined. So because of that, Heather and other researchers have argued and made the case with actual crime numbers, which is interesting today because did you see the revisions? Crime is down. Crime is down. Three weeks before the election. No, I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
But this Ferguson effect has been talked about. It's real. The term is real. The concept is real. The research is real. But this guy's on CNN talking about it. Listen to what happens here.
just yesterday, Ryan, about how in the context of riots, he was saying, let's just bring the military into it to deal with American citizens. I mean, that happened yesterday.
Right.
One thing I want to inject here on that, that's Abby Phillips. And they just keep going down this fascist thing. He's like, he's a fascist.
It's
he's
so
going to use the military.
Tedious.
Right. But they keep repeating this over and over. So this guy, you know, chimes in here.
But there are the post George Floyd riots resulted in an excess of over 15,000 black male deaths in this country.
How?
Yeah. The surge of violent crime, it was like Ferguson, the Floyd effect.
Respectfully, you got to explain to me how George Floyd's death.
Yeah.
Because I need causation here.
Yes,
because
what happens is after.
So that's Bakari Sellers. Look, they are apoplectic about this. They're like, wow, you're doing, you can't come on here. You'll hear Abby Phillips sort of scold him here in a second.
Ferguson riot, and after the Floyd riot, policemen, in fear of their jobs many times and political coverage, pull back from their jobs, resulting in an increased level of homicide.
Hold on.
You can look at the Washington Post.
Ryan, we
got to
stop you there because you're literally making a connection out of your own conjecture.
No.
You cannot.
It's a real thing.
That.
Look up the Ferguson effect. Look up the Floyd effect. It is a real term.
You cannot.
It's a real term.
She's such an idiot. It's unbelievable. Yeah. They act like it doesn't exist. Now you can take issue with the research. Some people have. You could say, okay, you know, let's pick around here on what Heather and others are arguing. But that's been the Ferguson effect has been something that's been discussed since 2015, essentially, in the aftermath of Mike Brown. So here, this is Bakari Sellers who says...
No, I just think there has to be a level of intellectual honesty. And
really?
One of the things we can talk about.
Okay,
here.
I'll stop there. Just think about that phrase, intellectual honesty, when he goes on here.
No, I just think there has to be a level of intellectual honesty. And one of the things we can talk about here when we talk about Donald Trump is he's actually somebody who never spoke out about George Floyd's death. And for me, it's kind of personal because as a black man, when you have someone with a knee on their neck for 9 minutes and some change and you're actually calling out for your mother while you're being suffocated on national TV and you are a parent and a son and a brother, that goes a long way.
Here's the part that Bakari Sellers forgot to put in there. When you're on national TV and you've already been in a convenience store claiming that you can't breathe and you say these things over and over and over again, and you're a criminal with a long rap sheet and you have drugs in your system and you're not obeying the police, because that's what happened. And all you have to do, Bakari Sellers or anyone else out there, is watch the fall of Minneapolis. This is what's awesome about new media and documentaries like that, because I've said this before. We talked about it a month and a half ago. There are still even people in this community, a lot of people in our community, they believe down deep that Mike Brown had his hands up, that he wasn't charging Officer Wilson, that he didn't try to grab a gun from Officer Wilson. All of this has been thoroughly debunked. It's not just a theory. It's not just a guess. We know exactly what happened. And the FBI in particular knows what happened because they did, under Eric Holder, a thorough investigation. Now, the whole country is so fooled on George Floyd. And if you haven't, I would just say this. If you have not watched Liz Collins' documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, I challenge anyone to come back after watching that and say, you can still think that Derek Chauvin and these cops might have done something wrong. But I dare you to watch the video that most Americans and most of the planet has never seen to what happened before the knee was on his neck and how he was yelling, I can't breathe from the very beginning. Right. So if you're a cop and the guy's saying from the very beginning, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. When he's not on the ground, well, you're probably more prone to not take those complaints as seriously. And by the way, the other officer that rolls up immediately, they call for an EMT. So this stuff has been so mangled and manipulated, and people have been lied to for years about this. And no one will take the time, because what? You can't virtue signal if you know the truth about these things. If you know exactly what George Floyd is all about, if you know how Tim Walz and the people in Minneapolis and Minnesota lied to the American people, this thing, not unlike Mike Brown, took on a life of its own. And it was disgusting what happened. And this is where, you know, I have a little bit of difficulty, because for those people who have been with me since, you know, I was on 97.1. I was outraged by January 6th. I thought it was awful. I put some of the blame on Trump, not for the riot and the attack on the Capitol, but for not getting involved a little sooner. On the other hand, you know, and I don't want to do the whataboutism. That's it. The whataboutism.
Right.
But let's look at the the consequences, and I guess the left doesn't see it this way, and maybe the right doesn't see it the other way. Maybe it's just some people in the middle. I don't really know. But you have people on the left, and maybe even in the center, you know, that were so outraged by what happened on January 6th, they could not even fathom putting, you know, Donald Trump back in the White House, because that's all they think about is January 6th. Now, most of the American people think about going to the grocery store, not being able to put food on their table. But, you know, the elites and a lot of other people want to talk about fascism and all this other stuff, right? But if people actually knew the truth about some of these things, I think we'd have a far, far different reaction across the country. But that's being, you know, people are protected. There's no way you'll have a media that's going to get involved and actually tell the truth on a majority of these issues. And it's sad. And I've said this before, because I was put back on my heels when Trump started saying fake news, the fake news, because I believe in good journalism, which doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't.
And when he said the media is the enemy of the people, I thought that was ridiculous. I thought it was ridiculous. How can the enemy of the people be? And this is someone who's already at that point talked about media bias. But I felt like the bias was a little bit more isolated, right? Well, it wasn't. It's just infiltrated all of the media. And they don't care about reporting anymore. No. They simply don't. They care about agenda journalism. And we've seen that on display day after day after day. We really have. Okay, I thought we were going to get Kilmeade on here. We do not have him yet. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a little break. We'll come back here and we'll have much more. We got Sue's News in the next hour. Brett Baer's interview with Kamala Law coming up at 5. Well, we think Kilmeade is lost somewhere. He might be on an airplane, so I don't know if we're going to get him this afternoon. Might have to reschedule him for tomorrow as well, but that's okay. We're all getting ready for the Brett Baer interview. This is interesting juxtaposition from Caitlin Collins. You know, they're playing her on SNL too, Sue, you know.
Yeah.
Because she's one of the CNN... Well, she was one of the moderators, wasn't she?
I don't remember.
She's just one of the CNN talking heads that likes to say stupid things. But here's something from March 26th of 21. You might remember, and the audience might remember, that in the aftermath of some of these elections, Georgia passed a big election reform law, right? Which prevented so many people. It disenfranchised so many damn people, African-Americans, minorities. It prevented them from voting, Sue. And we're trying to, you know, we're trying to do something about it, because all of a sudden, Caitlin Collins has now, in a new tweet, said this. Well, first of all, here's what she said in 21. Upon leaving the White House, President Biden tells us the new Georgia voting law is an atrocity that is nothing but punitive. On giving out water to voters in line, he says, give me a break. So Larry David did an entire season of Curb Your Enthusiasm on this Georgia voting law. You know what happened yesterday? More than 300,000 people, 123% higher than any other previous record, cast their ballots in Georgia yesterday. It doesn't seem like it's too tough to do right now, does it?
Obviously, the people who are going to vote right now are decided, but the truth is there are still a lot of persuadable voters in Georgia and other swing states. New York Times, CNN poll found that they did a poll of Georgia, North Carolina, and Arizona swing voters, found 18% either is undecided or leaning towards Trump or towards Harris, but still could change their mind.
That's Mark Thiessen on Fox this morning. I am told by Fred that we have Brian this afternoon, so we had a little trouble connecting with him. Mr. Kilmeade, are you there? How are you?
What's going on, Mark? How are you?
Well, I'm good. We're going to air Brett's interview at 5 o'clock, so I'm very much looking forward to that. You know, I don't know if you saw this. This made me laugh, and I had to highlight this at the beginning of the show, because I'm sure he's your friend. My friend and your friend, Brian Stelter, tweeted out that Brett Baer brings some significant baggage to today's Kamala Harris interview. Brian Stelter said that. Brian Kilmeade.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Dumbass. Just, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this guy, how he's even still in the business, go back to his Ivy League education and organize protests against Israel, whatever he wants to do. But anybody at CNN, I really have no patience for. And what they've done covering up Joe Biden's dementia.
Exactly.
What they've done pretending that she's a seasoned candidate, that everything that MSNBC is worse and Jake Tapper has gotten better. But everything that Donald Trump says is to be taken literally. And the American people have begun to ignore it. And anybody who thinks Brian Stelter is going to change the country's opinion of Brett Baer is crazy.
Well, and I guess my expectation tonight is Brett's going to do a great job, and I think he's going to ask some questions that have not been asked before. I mean, personally, I hope he asks the women's sports trans question, because they have not been pressed on that at this point. It's a big issue. Fox covers it a lot. You know it's a big issue. People care about it.
Mark, it's just happening. UNLV, San Jose State, volleyball. Let's forfeit. This isn't, you know, not to put it down, but this isn't some community college in the middle of Minnesota. Or this isn't some small high school in Iowa. This is major sports. And believe me, if my daughter who plays college soccer, if there was a guy on the other team pretending to be a girl, I don't want him playing. You know, I know what it's like. You're told as a coach, you don't even want to scrimmage guys after, you don't want boys and girls who are even scrimmaging after seventh grade, because it really becomes a problem. You can get a kid permanently hurt, and the county can get sued. All of a sudden, we're letting them play contact sports. And I interviewed a girl, and we discussed this, that was in high, she was in college. She's in college now. She's a junior. But her senior year in high school, she got hit in the head by a transgender player, and she still has headaches. They go to constant CAT scans to try to solve it. Still has headaches today. And our goal is just to get the word out. You're not being bigoted or intolerant by saying you want to play against other girls. I think girls' sports matters. Also, when it comes to informing the parents, yes. I see a group of doctors now suing states to allow transgenders to get to change sexes. Because in certain states like Florida, they're going to ban it. You know, wait till you're 21 to decide to ruin your life. Or you know, what in some special circumstances, after seeing therapists, it's the only way to exist. Go do it. But at 15, 14,
yeah, no way.
13, 17, even 18.
I'm with you. Well, look, the number one question that people have asked me in the last couple of days is, why is she doing this interview with Brett Baer? What's your answer to that question?
My opinion, because I asked Brett this, why now? And I actually was texting with him yesterday about this. I forgot what's on the air and what was on my text. And I said, he goes, what do you think? And I said, my opinion is that the reason she went ahead and did her blitz over the weekend is some numbers really look anemic. And it's not bolster and salt away. It is established. And it established that I am a credible alternative to Donald Trump, because so far, after the sugar high, nobody believes she credible can run things. People are worrying that there's a divide in the Democratic Party. So she is trying to win over Nikki Haley Republicans, and she is trying to win over independents, because she's seen the stats. No one believes it, but the reason why we're the number one network is not because Republicans watch, it's because Americans watch. And it's the most interesting, down-to-earth, diverse programming. Gutfeld's different than Neil Cavuto. Fox and Friends is different than Sean Hannity. And I look at CNN and the other channels, and it's got the same thing. Trump sucks and Trump really sucks, back in a moment. And we don't have that. And they say, well, how do I get on there? Can they be fair? And our listeners are really fair. Our viewers are really fair. And, you know, there's no doubt about it. And I think that she wants some of that, which makes me think, unlike what other people think, she's not going to come out like a house on fire looking to look at Brett Baer as Donald Trump. I think she's going to come out and look to charm and show confidence.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to come out on blast. I might be wrong. A lot of people think I'm crazy. I think she's going to come out to charm.
Oh, I think you're right. I think you're right on that. Right. Because, and so even on, like, if she's asked that question about, you know, biological males playing in women's sports, you know, she's going to do one of the flip flops, because that could really hurt her. Look, that's an issue that's resonating with African-Americans. And they have to know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mean African-Americans who only like pot? I want to win them over by giving them pot discounts, or letting them grow pot, and get tax breaks that other white people don't get from growing pot. Biggest insult ever, including on that list. I was flipped out, and people are going, Brian, don't say that. Don't say it. They're the ones being racist. Oh, we need the black vote, the male black vote, so figure marijuana.
Let's bribe them with weed, right? That is insult. Look, Sage Steele called that out this morning on Fox, and I thought that she was excellent. All right, one final question here. I've been inspired by my good friend John Sullivan, who is a business owner here in St. Louis, used to be a sponsor, but they retired Pet Supplies Plus. Yankees fan. John's a Yankees fan. He says, what's kill me, the Yankees or a Mets fan? You got an answer to that one?
I got to ask you first off, you guys are such a baseball city. What do you think about this? Do you feel like the game is over, the season's over? Are you interested? Are you guys interested?
I am. I don't know about St. Louis because St. Louis, but I'm a baseball fan. Fred's a baseball fan, so I've been watching it, and I can't give up on baseball. Yes.
This is what I think. I grew up a Mets fan in a Yankee household and the extended family household. I was a Mets fan, Giant fan. So I am, but I'm not a Yankee hater. And what happened in the 90s, and I'm very curious to see what you think. They had so much class and so much success. They didn't spike the ball. Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter, Tino Martinez, Jorge Posada, Andy Pettit, just quality human beings. Joe Torre, self-effacing. I'm watching them dominate. It's really hard to hate these guys. It's not Reggie Jackson. You know, it's not, you know, Joe DiMaggio.
No, I agree with you.
Marilyn Monroe.
I watched Aaron Judge last night.
I'm no longer a Yankee hater.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of would put myself in that category because I was even watching Aaron Judge last night, and he's an impressive young guy. Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. Oh, look, I'm out of time. We could talk more about the Yankees next time in the Mets, but I had to get that on the record for you, Brian. So enjoy tonight.
Mets fan.
All right.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Beautiful Wednesday afternoon, a little chilly out there. Fall has certainly settled in. I had frost on my lawn this morning in the Fenton High Ridge area, and that was confusing to me. It really was, because I didn't think the temperature was low enough for the frost. I was very worried about my mom, Sue. Very worried.
I understand that, but that's not a hard freeze.
You know, I was telling Sue also, by the way, Alex Rich is here from 198.
I am, yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, we're happy to have you.
I'm glad that you didn't enjoy it too much without me here.
You were gone for 2 weeks, weren't you?
2 weeks. I had the Jewish holiday, and then I had, it's the new year. I know that what is it, like 1/13th of you is
3% Ashkenazi.
Okay,
yeah,
sure.
I'm a little bit in the tribe.
Yeah, but we accept you.
I said Happy New Year to Mark Gelman a couple weeks ago. I think that checked the box for sure. No, I was telling Sue, Fred, this is a true story. So every morning, this is so sad. My life is rather sad, but I go out every morning and I'm in my sweats, usually my stocking cap, and I look for my grass that's growing. And my neighbors must think I'm like, you know, wandering around confused or something like that. Because I mean, like this, and sometimes this is what's weird. Sometimes I do it like two or three times and nothing really changes in that time, but I just like to go out there. So there was this one little, you know, I'm filling in bare spots in the backyard, and this is my second attempt. I did really well on the first attempt growing grass, but there's a few spots I wanted to highlight. So I get down to one of them and I'm looking at it every day and nothing's happening. I go out there today and I almost need like a hallelujah choir playing in the background. I don't have that right now, but the soil appeared as if it was lifted off the ground. Mm. It looked like my dog had kind of dug into it or something like that. But you know what it was? It was the beautiful green sprigs of grass coming to life, pushing the soil.
The raised soil is always a good sign.
It was amazing.
It's one of the best feelings ever. Yes. When you plant, you go through so much trouble getting this grass
to
grow.
You're telling this to me.
It is.
We've planted it three times this year.
Oh. You hire me and I'll get you some grass. Okay, last night I went to Sturgill Simpson at the Fox, and I had like a last minute invite. I've seen Sturgill one time in Columbia at Roots and Blues, but not an entire show, and I don't know all of his music. I'm a fan of what I've heard, and like, he does a fair amount of covers. He didn't do Purple Rain last night, but he's known to do that. He did Allman Brothers last night, and then he did this song, and I want to play this to you. Alex, you're a big music guy, but you're younger than Fred and Sue and I, and I want to just see if they know what this is. So this is Sturgill. This is not live from last night, but this is the song, and I just want to see if you recognize the lyrics or anything. So let him sing here for just a second and see if this resonates, because it's not his song. It's a cover song.
Don't look too strange.
I don't think there's any way you're going to get it from this.
Not yet.
I've got nothing.
You know the end.
Oh, do you know the song a little bit? Okay, all right.
Here we go.
Here, listen.
I'm sorry.
Got it now?
Anything to say.
Yes. Alex, you know this one at all?
Heard.
No, they can't.
Fred, do you know the song or not? Yeah, you'll know it when I play the original. All right, so this is what the original sounds like. I could have played. See, Sue's singing along. It's called I Promise. You know the band, though?
Oh.
I couldn't come up with the band last night.
I can't tell you the band.
No. When in Rome,
yes.
1987, this was a hit. It was a top 10 hit here in the States for sure.
You'll know this, Fred.
You'll hear it's... Yeah, I do know it now.
Yeah.
Well, let me play the chorus, because the chorus really gets it here.
I'm sorry, but I'm just
right? So Johnny Holzman and I from the Well Hungarians, Johnny invited me to the show. We're watching and we start listening to the lyrics and we're like, wait a second. I know that song. And then we couldn't place it. And I start Googling, you know, the promise. And then I finally came up with it. But listen to this. So he's got this very understated voice at some points. And I just want you to hear what he does here with the last chorus on this. So just check this out.
For me, I promise you. I promise.
Wait for it.
I'm sorry, but I'm just thinking of.
Man, I get chills when I heard that, right? Listen to this guy. Haunting version.
Wow.
But if I help walk the world, make you fall for me, I promise you, I promise.
That's incredible. And let me tell you something, that was amazing live last night.
That's pretty amazing. I heard you last night say he sounded a little bit like Waylon.
Yeah, he's got some Waylon Jennings. Well, he rocks too. And then, you know, this reminded me of something because you know this song, right? Cyndi Lauper, yeah. Girls Just Want to Have Fun. My friend Greg Laswell, who is a singer-songwriter, he has several hundred thousand views of this because he started looking at the lyrics, and you can do that with the When in Rome song. You can see how Sturgill turned it into a country song. But if you look at the lyrics of Girls Just Want to Have Fun, it's kind of a bit of a depressing song, and this is what Greg did with it.
In the middle of the night.
It's a really stripped-down version, right?
My father says, what are you gonna do?
And he became, he was well known before that, but when he did that cover, it got a lot of attention. He's a guy, by the way, Greg's a guy that's been, like, half of his songs have been on Grey's Anatomy. So he's kind of known for that.
It's interesting you say that's a depressing one, because that's, Girls Just Want to Have Fun is one of the newer ones I'm adding to my playlist. I'm doing a wedding this weekend, Mark. We are the wedding band for a wedding coming up this weekend, and I've added this to my list.
Well, if you really dig into the lyrics, you can break it down as a song that's not as joyful as Cyndi Lauper's version. Sort of like, you know, Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. Everyone thinks that's a bit of an anthem, but that is a dark, dark song. When he does it acoustic, it is stripped down and dark and angry. So I love it when artists do different, you know, takes on songs, and I thought that was fascinating. And I didn't make it through the whole show last night because I was old and my daughter had to get up for Stanton Singers. But wow, I know the people that were there were blown away. I made the mistake of looking at the rest of the set list and it looked really good. He even did Red Red Wine from Neil, because that's a Neil Diamond song.
Well, you talk about people doing different versions. You know, I saw Teddy Swims last week. And, you know, he got famous from doing his cover of You're Still the One and did it on YouTube. And that's how he caught fame.
I am now in love with Teddy Swims.
He's great.
Ever since you told me about him.
You're a swimmer now.
Oh my gosh, I
love it. Love it. If I got Fred on board for some music, I feel like I can do
just
about
anything.
Who was
on Teddy Swims? Like,
no, I got Mark. Mark was sending me Teddy Swims.
Thank you for acknowledging. Let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Now, this is not a happy on this day in history, but 24 years ago in 2000, the small plane carrying Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan, top aide Chris Sifford, and piloted by his son, Randy, not Chris's son, but Mel Carnahan's son, crashed in Jefferson County and killed all three of them. Do you remember this story, Fred?
I remember. I was at home. It was a stormy night, and I had to come back down to work. Because of the accident.
I remember driving to do my morning show at WTMJ in Milwaukee. I had left Missouri, and I knew Chris. I had an interesting relationship with Chris because I teased him a lot when I was in Columbia, Missouri. I actually started calling him Governor Sifford because Mel would never do interviews.
That is 100% accurate.
So Sifford, he was a really good, talkative young. He actually dated an ex-girlfriend of mine at the time. But so this is how I knew I got to him, because I started calling him Governor Sifford. And it got back to me that that kind of annoyed him. And, you know, I teased him quite a bit. So I didn't really consider him a friend, but we had a media relationship. But I was driving to work that morning, and it was probably, I would get to work at 3:15. It was probably 3 in the morning listening, Fred, to like the ABC newscast at the top of the hour nationally, and they covered that story.
Chris Sifford, we worked at News Plus and did traffic, and he was, you're exactly right. Mel would not speak, but Chris always would. Carnahan was running against John Ashcroft at the time for Senate. And he won the election. Carnahan did. And they appointed his wife, Jean, to do that. That was 24 years ago today. Now, yesterday I talked about this.
Mel Carnahan in 2024 would be a Republican, like a conservative Republican.
Seriously.
Okay, just
seriously.
So you know.
We talked yesterday about the Luke Combs and Eric Church's benefit show concert for Carolina. They had this huge demand for tickets. Well, they've decided to live stream it. Okay, I am not aware of this. What is Veeps streaming? Alex, do you know?
I don't.
Have you guys heard of it?
I'm embarrassed that I don't know.
V-E-E-P-S, Veeps.
You know what? I actually threw on my Fire TV the other night, and it came up for the first time, and I thought to myself, what is that? It was like a new app on the TV that I had not seen before.
Well, I hadn't seen it at all, so that's where you can watch it if you weren't one of the lucky 75,000 fans to get tickets. It's only $24.99, and you have the option to donate more if you're able, and it's kind of a cool thing. Okay, so
when I go to the website, it says the premier home for live music.
Oh, see?
I think this is actually a great... Yeah, it's great for the benefit, obviously, for charity, but I think this is great that they are probably going to start doing for a lot more concerts. If you can't afford to go to concerts,
you can
stream a concert.
Now, I will tell you that we all thought that was a great idea during COVID, and it didn't work out very well, but they say on here, this will make more sense to you.
Okay.
So it says the official streaming partner of Live Nation and Ticketmaster. So they're thinking out of the box. They have a bunch of comedy specials.
Okay.
And some originals, but that's interesting. I'd never heard of it before.
I hadn't either. So there'll be Luke Combs, Eric Church, Billy Strings, James Taylor, Keith Urban, blah, blah, blah. And the Avett Brothers, I guess.
Avett Brothers. They're
Thank
awesome.
You,
They're
Avett.
From North Carolina.
And all of them will be on there. So if you want to watch that, go right ahead. Okay. Green Day's Dookie album recently made the 13th album to be certified double diamond by the Recording Industry Association of America. We have a little bit from that. It's got a long enough intro that I can say this. So, only 13 albums have hit the 20 million sales mark, and this is now number 13. They just made it in.
What was it, 20 million?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard you crying loud.
That is an amazing accomplishment.
Do you have some others that are on that list?
I do. Are you ready?
I'm
Thanks for asking, Alex.
You like
we have
that?
Some samples here this
she
afternoon.
She teed that up for me.
I did. It just came on. This was the old... This is the one that made it on before. This one from Shania Twain has 20 million as well. 1997 from her album Come On Over.
I love Shania. I just loved her. And I still do, I think. She turned me, you know, as many males at the time that hated country music, into a country music lover, Sue.
Yeah,
and I know
sure.
it's
she's
not
adorable,
like the type of,
I get it.
But she's a hell of a performer. I've seen her three times
is.
In concert.
Yeah.
She works very hard. She also, you know, Mutt Lange, who was the producer of Def Leppard and other artists, Mutt and Shania. That was an incredible songwriting and producing pair.
Until he had an affair with her best friend.
Well, that happens too, you know.
But yes. And then above Shania Twain, Fleetwood Mac, and of course this album.
One of the best songs ever.
Yeah. Love it,
the
love
art
it,
of
love
the 2.5-minute song and Lindsey Buckingham here really is incredible.
Speaking of affairs, they were all married or something at one point or another, everybody in the band
True.
Fleetwood Mac, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is literally one of my favorite
Same.
Songs. If I had to pick like my top 15, it would, I don't know if it cracked the top 10, but it might.
Same. It might be in my top 10.
Me too.
Rumors, Fleetwood Mac, in 1977, this album came out. It sold 21 million copies. And that, by the way, is considered double diamond. That's
right.
what
That's
this
right.
is called. Okay, now I'm going to skip a few and then go to number one. Number four is Cracked Rearview. Hootie and the Blowfish has 22 million.
Our friend Tim Summer signed
That's
that
right.
band, right?
Billy Joel, Greatest Hits, 1 and 2, 23 million. Garth Brooks, Double Live, made 23 million in sales. Pink Floyd, The Wall, 23 million. Led Zeppelin, The Beatles' White Album, sold 24 million. Hotel California by the Eagles, 26 million. Back in Black, AC/DC, 27 million. Thriller, Michael Jackson, 34 million. And wow. this sold the most albums ever.
It's another tequila sun.
Nice job hitting the post,
Thank
too.
You. Yeah.
Stirring slowly across the sky.
said goodbye.
I love Do it. You want to guess how many? This is from their greatest hits, 1971 to 1975, the Eagles. The Thriller album sold 34 million. What do you think the Eagles, this album sold, Fred?
38.
What do you say, Alex?
I'm going to go 42 for
that's
some reason.
That's
damn it, I was going to go 42. I'm going to go 42 and $1, Sue.
Fred is dead on.
Oh,
38 million albums. So there you have it.
And my at Rick's Resort, my friend Rick Niner in Las Vegas, I'm going to regret this decision. So you know what happened? They're playing Sphere. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing it right is what I heard. You know, I've been the outlier on the U2 show, and I wasn't crazy about the U2 show. I'm the only one, apparently. But I said at the time, Sphere is amazing. Someone's going to go in there and do it right. I heard great things about the Dead and Company show, but he's going this Saturday night to see the Eagles at Sphere. And let me take you back to July when the tickets went on sale. And he said, hey, you want to come? Because I go to Vegas all the time.
Sure.
I've seen the Eagles enough times. I don't need to see the Eagles. Then the reviews started coming out for this show, and I'm going to really be mad that
okay,
I'm not going.
Mark, when you say they do it right, what does that mean within the Sphere?
Well, so what my criticism of the U2 show was, as a rock show, it was something that didn't impress me. The visuals and everything were great because of Sphere, but it just didn't seem cohesive and tied together. And Rick and I both agreed the technology here is amazing, and someone's going to go in here and really try to do something maybe a little bit more unique. Look, U2 was the first swing of the bat. And I'm an outlier. Not everyone agrees with me. They thought that the show was amazing. But when you start the lyric on a dark desert highway, you're going to see behind the Eagles in the Sphere desert highway, and you're rolling.
That's
and,
cool.
You know, the visuals of that place, it's a little overwhelming. Like, I had to look away a few times when I was at that U2 show because you
it's
feel
a
like,
lot.
Yeah,
and you're right.
It is a
there?
Lot. So.
Is it like going to a what you call it movie at the Science Center?
The Omni Max.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. It's
is
like
it
that,
like an IMAX only on steroids?
Steroids, absolutely.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. All right, the 42 NFL players with the most points in their careers are all kickers, right? I mean, that's just
makes
how
sense.
It is.
Sure.
Yep.
But the 43rd highest scoring player is
Tom Brady.
Good question. Nope.
Really?
Not Tom for Brady. Throwing them.
Okay.
For scoring.
Well, but
crossing the line. Himself.
Okay, like Emmitt Smith or somebody like that.
I don't know. I really don't.
I don't know.
Jerry Rice.
Oh, that does make sense.
Jerry Rice, who is a wide receiver. And that's it for Sue's News.
Thank you, Sue. That's very good. I like that. Nice random fact. We're coming back. I do have a grocery. We had a music quiz. I have a grocery store quiz for you coming up. Brett Baer's interview with Kamalala at 5.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I was in a little country mood after the Sturgill Simpson show last night, so I thought we'd go a little Brooks and Dunn. Although Sue always points out that this is not the original version of the song, but I still like the Brooks and Dunn version, right? Alex Rich from Y98 hanging out. Fred is here. I just put a picture up on the X, formerly Twitter, and you can always follow me at Mark Reardon, KFTK, of my grocery cart from this morning at Walmart in High Ridge.
I have
my
a question.
Favorite Walmart. Yes, yes, Sue.
What is under the banana?
That was a good question,
Let me
Sue.
Look here.
Thank
it
you.
Says Cynex.
Oh, those are meatballs. And they're, the brand there, yeah, what is it, S-I-M-E-K, they're frozen meatballs that I make tonight, for example, with my pasta, my Rouse spaghetti sauce, and my pasta, and my meatballs.
That
I like my meatballs.
Sounds good, actually.
It really is, they're really good. So, but that's one of my items. So what I have here is, and you know, there's an interesting tie into this, because you see the wavy Lays, the party size wavy Lays?
Yeah.
Well, the party size wavy Lays, that's what the regular size used to be. There is no party size anymore.
Oh.
I was going to say, it doesn't look that party.
No,
but
it doesn't.
It does
it's not.
It's
not a huge party.
But before we get back to the grocery quiz, let me indicate this. This was an article that came out today in the New York Post. PepsiCo is trying to win back customers turned off by shrinkflation, which is what I'm addressing here, with a special promotion that offers more chips in bags of Lay's, Doritos, Tostitos, and Ruffles.
Smart.
The company told CNN that bonus bags of Tostitos and Ruffles will contain 20% more potato chips for the same price. Yeah, how about bonus bags? How about all of them? Because I can't even believe. Well, let me get back to the grocery quiz. So I pick up, as you can see here, just a few items this morning at Walmart, right? I get the, I was actually shopping for a vacuum cleaner, believe it or not, a Dyson, like, cordless vacuum cleaner that was on sale, but they didn't have it, so I ordered it from Dyson.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, but I got the Wavy Lays, I got the whipped Philadelphia cream cheese, I got the Great Value Greek yogurt, didn't want to buy the better brand.
I get that, too. That's the same brand.
It's not that bad. You know, no, you can buy the more expensive stuff. Got some strawberries there, I have two bananas, I have some Colby Jack, Great Value Colby Jack cheese, I have Lender's plain bagels, and I have a 24-pack of Diet Coke in my meatballs. Did I mention the meatballs? So you want to take a stab at what that is? I mean, maybe you won't be surprised by this, but I just am curious.
All right. I don't buy a lot of this, but I'm going to go for, I'd say, like $55, $60. I'll say $60.
Mm, okay. Alex?
I was going to say like $46.
Okay. Fred. What you? Fred guessed earlier, like,
and
legitimately.
Here's what I did.
So.
I saw 9 items. I assume everything's $4. Mm-hmm. So I said $36.
Yeah. Alex was closest, but you, I
46,
think,
did I just
went
go
over? 43. But what I thought was, and I wish I actually had the receipt. There's a part of me that wants to keep this and then do the same thing in a year. Like, buy the same products
in a
year.
That's interesting. You ought to do that.
But the whipped freaking cream cheese was $3.97. The Colby Jack was $2.24. My meatballs were $6.98. The bagels were $2.46.
That's some cheap meatballs. Can I just say?
How much were the meatballs?
$6.98.
How many come in that bag?
Yeah.
I don't know, but they're good.
Because you figure a pound of meat is.
There's not a lot.
Exactly. If you're going to make your own meatballs. You know,
okay. I'm not sure. I don't know how many are in there, but 40 maybe, something like that. Strawberries were $2.92. They were on sale today. The bananas were pretty cheap. They were just 43 cents. Look at that. The Lay's, this is the thing. The party size Lay's, $5.44.
Really?
That's ridiculous.
That's nearly as expensive as frozen meatballs.
Half of that bag is filled with air.
Yeah. And that's what, by the way, that's the kind of price you would pay at like the convenience store just a few years ago, right?
This was at Walmart?
Yeah. And then the Diet Coke, this got me a little bit, and this is where you get the price spike, $13.48. Now, that's on me, because I make these decisions, right? I didn't have to get the Diet Coke. Here's something interesting. I love Jeffco. I love my peeps in Jeffco, even though I'm in St. Louis County. Want to hear the tax rate in Jeffco?
Yeah.
5.3.
Wow,
try to do that
low.
In St. Louis County.
Yeah, no
I
way.
I mean, you're paying, where you live at that Loughborough Schnucks and the Lowe's, it's over 10% because they have the special business district taxes.
Right.
That's
unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I bring that little grocery quiz up for a reason. I think people can relate to this because in my mind, and I don't think this is too far off the mark, if I would have bought those same things 3 years ago, that's like $25.
Let me ask you this,
maybe,
Mark.
Maybe $30.
At what point, at what price point would that Diet Coke have to get to really get you to consider?
Oh, there isn't one. Well,
I mean, you'd think you'd pay $40 for that case
of
Diet Coke?
No, of course not. I'm just going to tell you, Sue's probably right because it is my addiction, but I have reached a breaking point. When I'm going up, and I'm the person that does the grocery shopping, so if I'm going up and down the aisles, I wish I could think of an example from today, but I'll reach for something, I'll look at the price, and I'll say, I can't justify that. It's like $7 or $8 when it should be $3 or $4. I told you about buying ice at the Fastlane. Now, that's a convenience store, but it's $6.50
for a bag
big bag of ice. Right. All right. Another topic here. I want to see, and I don't know how much interest you have in all of this, Sue, but I kind of waded into the Monsters, the Menendez brother thing, and I'm on episode 6 now, and last night was very interesting. Alex, you said you've watched this, right?
I am. I'm on episode 7, I think, now.
Wait, you guys, is this a new one? Because
yes.
I think I watched an old one.
The Monsters one is what I'm talking about.
I don't think, I haven't watched a new one.
Ryan Murphy is big producers done a lot of the stuff out there, the O.J. Simpson, series, etc. This is one of the biographical crime drama anthology series that they do on Netflix. And it's, of course, about the murders in 1989. Some of us remember this very well, of Jose and Kitty Menendez by their sons, Lyle and Eric. And The episode that I watched last night, well, first of all, this thing is getting some mixed reviews for sure, and people are concerned, and these guys are in the news again, trying to get new trials and saying that they're the victims. The whole thing, if you go back to what happened with the murders, remember, they kill their parents, they go on shopping sprees, they're spending all the money of the inheritance, and then they get arrested for the murders, but they claim that they're victims because they were abused by their parents, sexually abused, and in some ways just in awful fashion, right, if you believe what they say. Now, last night was fascinating because I had watched the first four episodes, and I'm watching this fifth episode, and about 8 minutes into the fifth episode, I'm noticing there has not been an edit. And the episode features Eric Menendez in a prison room at a table being interviewed by his lawyer. Actress is playing Leslie Abramson. And all you see is the camera angle is from behind her head. You see her curly hair. You don't even see her face. You hear her voice. She's asking Eric Menendez, the character, the actor here is really, really good. I'm going to predict right now he's going to win some awards for this. Cooper Koch? I don't even know who he is.
He is great, though.
He's good. Anyway, so I'm watching 8 minutes in. No edits. I'm like, this is one continuous shot. And you didn't even realize that.
I didn't.
So I kept watching 15 minutes. And it's I cannot look away because this kid is telling this awful story of abuse by his parents. And I'm thinking, I'm just going to tell you what my reaction is. I'd have killed my freaking parents, too, if they did this to me. Anally rape you, etc. Awful. And I'm watching 20 minutes into it. No edits.
Wow.
Then it ends. And I looked at the time, like, wait a second, this was not an hour, because most of the episodes have been, you know, from 44 to an hour, I think. It was 33 minutes, one damn continuous shot. No edits. And I looked this up. They did, I think that they said they did it four times a day, 2 days. So half an hour. And this guy had, all those lines. It was very emotional. Now, the one thing that I would say, and you saw that episode, right?
I did. But I didn't know. I would never have even guessed. I mean, it was done so well.
Yeah. Well, wow. I notice these things, Alex.
You do. That's you were a movie critic back in your day.
It makes you very, very sympathetic to the Menendez brothers. Now, I don't know all the facts of the case. Now, there's a documentary out about this. And, Fred, this is even in the news today. So what I read, and I don't like to read about series when I'm still watching it, but I was so curious about this episode because of the continuous shot that I saw a lot of criticism of that, you know, that particular narrative as just playing themselves off as the victims because people think that they've lied about this. I hear that in the subsequent episodes, you're going to see some of those lies exposed. So I don't even know what to believe. What I can tell you is that was still an incredible episode.
That's kind of where I'm at. I'm kind of past that. And you do definitely start to question what you had thought from watching the earlier episodes.
Right, but
you
I think that's
question
good.
Yourself, yeah, for
right.
Sure.
I don't have a problem with that because I think that Ryan Murphy's doing this, you know, on purpose. So they're in the news today, though, because they're trying to get a new trial. Oh, my God, you know who's involved in this? Apparently, like Rosie O'Donnell and some of these
Kim
folks.
Kardashian's big
well,
into this,
Kardashian's
right?
been on this all the time, right? Yeah. And she knows Ryan Murphy, and they've, you know, had conversations. The guy who played Eric Menendez went and met the real Eric Menendez. Ryan Murphy said, I don't have any interest in talking to these guys, right? So that's what he said. But they're in the news. This is Jonathan Hunt from Fox.
The Menendez brothers are potentially now just weeks away from freedom as the campaign to reconsider their case gathers pace. Around 30 members of the extended Menendez family, along with attorney Mark Geragos, gathered outside a downtown L.A. courthouse today to voice their support for the brothers just 2 weeks after Los Angeles County District Attorney George Gascon first said his office is taking a new look at the notorious case.
So I don't know where this will take us. And I'm not going to sit here and make the case that these guys are victims and that they should not have been convicted of murder because I don't know that independently. I just know that the show has been pretty effective in what I would call the push and the pull because good shows will challenge you this way and you don't know exactly where it's going to take you. And, you know, you're going to have a period in those first few episodes where you think these guys are monsters. Oh, my God, they blew their parents' faces off literally with a shotgun. But then you hear about the abuse and some of the things that both the mother and the father did. And if any of it's true, it's really kind of horrifying.
You know, it's interesting what I think Netflix and a lot of these series have done for multiple cases. You think about this one, you think of, remember back to Making a Murderer with Stephen Avery.
Yeah, but that was all BS, Alex. That's the problem. Making a Murderer was a documentary about Stephen Avery, who is completely guilty. I was in Wisconsin when that case was taking place, okay, so yeah. I know all about Stephen Avery, sure. right? And he could not be more guilty. Anyone, you know, Dan O'Donnell, who's a friend, and he's on the show from WISN in Milwaukee, Dan covered that trial. Anybody who was there for the trial, there's not one person I know that yeah. will tell you that he's not guilty, because he is guilty. That's the thing.
Sure. So it definitely brings attention back to these cases that people may have never even heard of.
Right, but that's a cautionary tale, because again, here you got Garagos and the family, some of the family members. Look, they're probably people related to O.J. Simpson, like maybe his kids who didn't think that he brutally killed their mother, but he did.
Yeah.
But he did. The family's going to be confused and they're not going to want to believe this stuff. I think they're just asking for a new trial, though, aren't they?
Or a different sentencing. A different punishment, that sort of thing.
And they've been there for, 30 years, right?
Yeah, and it seems like I heard the attorney, Mark Garagos, say, if these were the Menendez sisters, this would be a totally different story.
So that's interesting.
Well, I would say this. You know, maybe there is something to that. I would recommend the show, Monsters. Sure. However, it's tough.
It's tough to get through.
It's really tough to get through.
Some
but that episode last night, wow, we're coming back. We're going to get you up to the top of the hour here, and then Brett Baer is going to take over with his interview of Kamala Harris. Alex, thank you for coming in on this Wednesday afternoon. It's good to see you.
Hey, you as well.
But we're going to get to our Kamala Harris interview and see if Brett Baer is going to ask some tough questions. So we're going to air that from 5 to 5:30. He said that it would probably be a half an hour. So you were asking the question, is it live? It is not live. We were told that she was coming. She had events earlier today. She was going to come in around 4. They were going to do the interview. Half an hour is what he estimated. And then they're flipping around unedited. That's the key, because 60 Minutes didn't exactly do that. And they won't even release the transcript. So she's going to have a half an hour. Hopefully, you know, he even said in his preview, maybe getting her to try to answer some of the questions that have not been asked of her yet. So I'm kind of hoping that the trans sports issue is asked. We'll see what happens. We got a break, though, and we're coming right back. It was almost like we ended the break. We're going to start the break. Brett's coming up next on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there.
Get more at 97.1talk.com. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Well, we're going to talk about that interview right now, and we'll share some audio eventually as well. Here's the one miss, Sue, and we were all in here watching this and reacting, and the Twitter reaction, or the X, if you will, was actually really interesting, because people were responding, you know, in real time. Like Steve Cordes, who is a, you know, guest on a regular basis, said, Kamala Harris has no idea she's been the vice president for the last 1,365 days, because Brett says more than 70% of Americans say the country's on the wrong track. You've been in office for the last 3.5 years. Her answer was, and Donald Trump has been running for office. It's all Donald Trump. Now, look, she's coached up. She pivoted quite well. But here's the miss. He got to the trans issue, right? I love the way that they played the audio and some of the ads.
That was great.
Yes, and to get reaction. So he goes down that line of questioning about the surgeries for trans sexual inmates. And she blames it on Trump, because everything is blamed on
everything's his fault.
But he missed the window to say, okay, but what about biological men competing against biological women, like in this college volleyball situation with San Jose State? But that was a miss. And that's the one thing I wanted to pin her down on, because I don't know how she would have answered that question. I really don't. Yeah. Ethan, what do we have here? Do we have anything new? Because the other favorite part was, well, and this is essentially what Steve said. She said... We all looked at each other, and I couldn't believe that she said this with a straight face. You got to take the responsibility for what happens in your administration. She said those words out loud, which that was maybe my favorite part. But you got to give credit to Brett Baer, despite the miss, and that's just a personal thing. You know, I just wish he would have followed up. And by the way, my sense is Brett probably wishes, you know, you're doing these interviews in the moment and you see something and then you want to go to the next question. He's only got a half an hour, 25 minutes. But I thought he did an exceptional job, because he followed up. He pressed. She tried to talk over him and not allow the questions. I think she got a little angry off for a while there. I'm not sure if that's going to play well. We talked to Kilmeade earlier. Brian said that what she wants to do is show that she's got a command. And I think that was the overriding goal. I don't know that she accomplished that, though.
No. And if all you do is say it's Donald Trump, He's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not a win.
Here's one.
You got to take responsible for what happened presidency. In your administration.
That's really good. Here's this.
If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on.
What?
You and I both know what I'm talking about.
No, we don't know what you're talking about. That's the thing.
You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, people have become... But listen, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me, the former chief of staff to the president, Donald Trump, former defense secretaries, national security advisor, and his vice president, one that he is unfit to serve, that he is unstable, that he is dangerous.
But that wasn't the question. Right? But this is what politicians do. They pivot, except for Trump, because he weaves. He doesn't pivot, he weaves. On the trans issue, here was.
When I was attorney general, I learned that the California Department of Corrections, that they were standing in the way of surgery.
For prisoners.
For prisoners. And there was a specific case. And when I learned about the case, I worked behind the scenes to not only make sure that that transgender woman got the services she was deserving. I made sure that they changed the policy in the state of California.
So that was 2019. Yeah. And she gets pressed on that and she just dances around the whole issue because she's on the record on all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So when they try to expose that, all she says is Donald Trump.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, Brett's like, no, I really don't. Can you help me out there? Right? I don't know what the hell you're talking about. But that was very interesting.
Ooh.
Now, the question is, what will the impact of this be? Go ahead, Sue.
Okay, here's the other thing that got me. When he said, how long did you know that Joe Biden wasn't himself? You talked to him, you met with him every week. And she did not know what to say to that.
But she also acted like nothing was wrong.
Yes,
with the
that's
president.
Exactly what she went with.
Here's a question for you, and it's a rhetorical question. Why in the hell did it take until 5 p.m. Central on the 16th of October, 3 weeks ahead of a presidential election, to anyone in the media to ask a question along those lines?
Yeah.
Now, Fox people have been asking those, but you know what I mean? That's never come up really. And this is one of the great scandals, I think, of the last 6 months. And I don't know if after the election, you got some of these bored reporters who won't be able to punch Trump around anymore. Or they'll be pissed off that he's back in the White House. That'll start doing some real journalism on how this was covered up by this vice president and others. Look, we got solid reporting that 2 years ago in a cabinet meeting, people were like, wait a second, what's going on with this guy? And that was 2.5 years ago.
Right. Brett Baer is saying, gosh, even George Clooney came out and said, he's not the man that I knew.
Right.
And you meet with him every week and said nothing. He's great.
Yeah, that's confusing to a lot of people. Now, the implications of all this, because what's going to happen is everyone on the right, and they're doing it on the X, formerly Twitter right now, is chewing her up, saying this is a terrible performance because it was. But what will be the reaction on CNN? I don't know. Fred Jennings will probably be on CNN tonight because they have him working nonstop. He was not with us today. We flipped him around. Kilmeade could do today. So we had Brian on earlier, but Jennings is going to be here tomorrow. But I'll be very curious to see what the reaction is. It's like the first debate. When we were all watching that at the watch party, I wanted to hear what ESPN said and if they called it accurately. And they did, to their credit, you know, that night. But will they call this one accurately? I don't know. And will it really impact the election at all?
I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. And when pressed on the border, she just dances around and says it's because they didn't pass that bill.
I don't think she gave them anything that they can immediately turn around in an ad. I mean, there's enough of that stuff out there, but there wasn't that moment where she cratered. I'm just curious about the anger. I mean, maybe that plays well, but she did get a little pissy is the word.
Well, nobody asks the real questions.
I know.
It's off-putting.
That was very unusual for her. We're coming back. We have audio cut of the day. I haven't heard that one in a while.
Nice.
You know that one? That's Michael Penn.
Penn.
Yeah, Michael Penn. No myth. Good song. Sean Penn's brother. Sean Penn's less crazy brother, I think I would say. So the X, formerly Twitter, is a real interesting place to be right now in the aftermath of this interview. And I think it's going to take a little while for people to digest it and chew it up and then kind of break it down. But it will be interesting to hear the reaction in the next 24 hours. Now, this is all coming. You know, one of the questions I asked Brian, and Brian asked Brett this question, we had Kilmeade on earlier. Why did she do this interview? Like, why? Well, and his theory was, and I think there's something to this, just to show that she had a command, if you will, because it doesn't really matter. And that became very clear what she specifically says, because MSNBC and CNN, they'll kind of toss that aside. But some of it really, some of it's even funnier when you not only hear it, but you see it in print, you know, like the questions themselves. They're just, it's just awkward. Like
the script.
Somebody, we talked about the one where, you know, we just played the one where she said, you and I both know what I'm talking about. So people are putting this out there, like the print version of that is Bear. If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years. Harris, Trump has been running for office. Bear, but you've been in office. Harris, you and I both know what I'm talking about. Bear, actually, I don't know what you're talking about. And that was kind of a funny way to break it down. But this is all kind of framed around some very interesting polling that's coming in right now. Nate Silver's kind of calling this a real dead heat. The poll. Keep in mind, you know, the other thing about the national polling, this is something to keep in mind. If you see a national poll that has Harris leading by 2%, 2.5%, she very, very likely will win the popular vote by 2%. Think about California, the millions of votes just coming from there, or Cook County. So the polling for the national race, if you start seeing, oh, it looks like Harris has a, you know, the Real Clear Politics average is 2 points or whatever it is, she'll probably win by that much. But that doesn't win the Electoral College necessarily. So there is a difference. But we're going to talk more about this tomorrow, certainly. I have something a little different here coming on the heels of this interview to do for Audio Cut of the Day. So let's get to that.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the Audio Cut of the Day.
Okay, so Mark Halperin is a guy that's a political reporter, and he worked for ABC News. And he's also the guy, now some of you might remember, he kind of had a little Me Too issue, and I think they fired him. He's out on his own. But he was the guy that predicted accurately that Nancy Pelosi and other senior Democrats would shove Biden to the curb, right? And, you know, he got that right. There were some other calls earlier this year about Biden getting out of the race and the timetable of that Halperin kind of called very accurately. So he was on Tucker Carlson's podcast yesterday. And he made quite a dire prediction here.
Say this not flippantly. I think it will be the cause of the greatest mental health crisis in the history of the country. I think tens of millions of people will question their connection to the nation, their connection to other human beings, their connection to their vision of what their future for them and their children could be like.
So he's talking about if Trump wins the election, he thinks he's predicting, now you got to hear him out here, the biggest mental health crisis.
And I think that will be require an enormous amount of access to mental health professionals. I think it'll lead to trauma in the workplace. I think there'll be some degree of.
Are you being serious?
100% serious. 100% serious. I think there'll be alcoholism. There'll be broken marriages.
What?
Yeah. They think he's the worst person possible to be president. And having won by the hand of Jim Comey and Fluke in 2016, and then performed in office for 4 years and denied who won the election last time in January 6th, the fact that under a fair election, America chose by the rules pre-agreed to, Donald Trump again, I think it will cause the biggest mental health crisis in the history of America. And I don't think it will be kind of a passing thing that by the inauguration will be fine. I think it will be sustained and unprecedented and hideous. And I don't think the country's ready for it.
Well, and he goes on here.
I think there'll be some violence. I think there'll be workplace fights. There'll be fights at kids' birthday parties. I think there'll be protests that will turn violent. I hope they're not, but I think there will be some. But I think it will be more, it'll be less anger and more a failure to understand how it could happen. You know, like the death of a child, or your spouse announcing that you know, your wife announcing she's a lesbian and she's leaving you for your best friend. Like a something that's so traumatic that it is impossible for even the most mentally healthy person to truly process.
Now, this sounds crazy, right? It sounds extreme, but what he's dialing into with the TDS that runs rampant, there are people that they do feel this way, and they will lose their.
I think you're right about that. And if you ask that person, what exactly are you afraid of? What has he done? They don't have an answer.
No, they wouldn't
yet
really have an answer.
They continue to
that.
Go on, and like it's an actual threat to them.
Well, that's because they've been told it's an actual threat to democracy. Just a couple more words from him here.
and incorporate into their daily life. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that's what's going to happen for tens of millions of people, because they think that their fellow citizens supporting Trump is a sign of fundamental evil at the heart of their fellow citizens and of the nation.
So that last part, he's right. I don't know about the ominous predictions, but he's right about that. These are people, and look, I addressed this issue yesterday. I've lost some friendships over this. They'll go after you even harder. There will be, Thanksgiving will be very uncomfortable, right? Now, I would say if it's in the other direction, it would still be uncomfortable. But listen, here's James Carville spreading a lot of this stuff too.
Jake, this is a very dangerous time when you think about it. And he is going full-throated authoritarianism. He's telling people they ought to beat some woman up at his rally. And he's going to say, and Michael Flynn is going to say, and all of them are going to say, we told you so. And you voted for us. So we have no choice but to arrest our political enemies. And that's literally what's happening right in front of our face.
So that's what they think is going to happen. They think he's going to round people up because he's talked about, you know, some political payback. And then you got Biden. Listen to Biden.
Same guy. There's three other major cases waiting for him, and he loses.
That is a
and deal. By the way, 34 felonies. And so far, he had good sentence. He got the sentence kicked back, but I want to watch that sentence. Look, Donald Trump's not running for you. He's running for himself.
Anyway, you know, the other thing, we're going to have to break into this audio and really get some stuff for tomorrow, Fred, but my favorite part was when, you know, there are so many favorite parts of what Brett was doing, but what was it that we reacted to? Because he was talking about something along those lines and kind of got under her skin at one point. I'd have to go back and listen to
the audio. Are you sure it wasn't the point where he said, how long did you talk to Joe Biden and realize he was going downhill and she just refused?
No, because there was something else that kind of caught my attention that he did, and I'm going to have to think about it. I think I had a brain cramp there. I had a Biden moment because I was listening to Biden. But look, they're trying to make this seem that if he's elected, you will lose the country, that it will be authoritarian. They're comparing him to, you know, Hitler. He's going to do a rally at Madison Square Garden. And just because he's doing a rally at Madison Square Garden, and just because the Nazis had a rally 100 years ago, that's the same thing, right? This is the mindset. But they're freaked out. You can hear it in Carville's voice. Mark Halperin might be a little too hyperbolic, but I don't know. We'll talk about it all tomorrow after we digest all this.
Get more at 971talk.com. Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.